Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Another assassination attempt, the third. This time at the White House Press Association Correspondents' Dinner, a friendly affair where high-ranking officials roast and dine and laugh. President Donald Trump emerged unscathed, and the gunman, Cole Allen, was charged today. So, who is the self-described friendly federal assassin from Torrance, California? A man who rode a Vespa and chatted with neighbors. Here's KNX in Los Angeles.
A lot of neighbors were just shocked to find out he's living so close, and they say they've seen him plenty of times. He rides his Vespa around. Emily Valdez talked with a guy who lives just a few doors down.
Are you familiar with Cole?
I saw him before.
Describe what his mannerisms were, if you ever talked to him.
I talked to him briefly. He had a pop-up tent in his front yard, and it blew over by the wind, and I helped him situate it. He rode his Vespa all the time and charged it in front of his house. And that's the extent of me talking to him.
Just seemed like a normal guy.
Yeah. No, I mean, he wasn't worried about his pop-up being blown over, but and was fine with my help.
What is your reaction to this?
I'd rather not make any judgments based on the guy, because I have no idea about him.
Cole Allen referred to himself as a friendly federal assassin in writings that were sent to his family members moments before he opened fire. The writings alluded to grievances over a range of Trump administration actions and recent events. Police say Allen was carrying a shotgun, handgun, and multiple knives. Anvi Bhutani is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She was at the correspondents' dinner when the shooter attacked and spoke with our Suzanne Whatley.
What was the security like as you entered the ballroom? Now, we heard you only needed a ticket. You didn't have to show an ID?
Yeah, that's right. This was my first White House correspondents' dinner, but the security to get into the hotel where the dinner was being hosted, the Hilton, all you had to do was present a paper invitation. There was no check of IDs, and that got you into the building initially. And then when you later wanted to get into the ballroom for dinner, there was a small sort of metal detector system as well as a bag check, but bags were not sent through any kind of scanning. And there wasn't a huge sort of airport style security system at all.
Did you hear the shots?
I did, yeah. So I was at a table pretty close to the front stage. We initially heard Secret Service, or what we thought and later learned was Secret Service, yelling for people to get down and saying there was an armed gunman. So we all kind of got down under our tables, and we later heard three sort of bang, bang, bang noises. And most of us were still underneath our tables at that time, although there's some video footage that's been circulating that people sort of sneakily took. And after that, it was complete chaos because no one knew what was going on. And we were all waiting for further instructions, trying to make sense of what had just taken place. And it was a room full of hundreds of journalists.
Anvi, were you frightened?
Yeah, I mean, it was really unexpected. And it was a scary situation. We were kind of hiding under the table and not sure how long would last, or there was very little information inside the room as well. The internet connection was really poor, so it was frightening because we had no details on what had just taken place and no way of figuring out either for the first few minutes what was going on.
And how did you know that it was finally safe to leave and there wasn't another possible shooter?
Yeah, well, we ended up staying in that ballroom waiting for further instructions. And some of us had started reporting, started sending photo and video back to our news bureaus and sending copy that they could put into stories. But we were just waiting for further instructions. Initially, they did say that they would continue on with the dinner and told everyone to please take your seats and that the dinner service was going to start. But everyone was pretty skeptical because, you know, it was a chaotic atmosphere. And then eventually, a little while after that, we were told that as per protocol, the entire building would have to be evacuated and that, you know, they had apprehended the shooter and had secured the building and it was safe for everyone to evacuate at that time. So we were just largely dependent and grateful to the members of law enforcement that were present to deal with the situation after the fact.
I understand that the White House Correspondents' Dinner is going to be rescheduled. Will you plan to attend?
I haven't made that decision.
So that was what it was like on the inside. Here's a look at the outside from WWJ in Detroit.
Peter Trumberg joins us now. He's the chair of the political science department at Oakland University. Would we call this an assassination attempt or not on the president?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, he didn't, the perpetrator didn't get very close, in all honesty, right? He was stopped at the security cordon where he was supposed to get stopped, right? And that was one level above where the ballroom is at the Washington Hilton. So the dignitaries, the president, everybody else was not really in any danger. But I think it's fair to say if someone's going to show up at a presidential event and is going to try to break through security, I think it's fair to say they're probably aiming for the president.
I mean, to assume so, yeah, is not irresponsible, I don't think. Call it what you will. And given that there are presumably plots that we never know about, this seems an unusually high number. What is this, three attempts on Trump's life?
Right. This is three. And it is high, you know, by historical standards, although we should remember that Gerald Ford was targeted twice within a couple of weeks by women who were associated with the Charles Manson family. So, you know, it's not unusual for presidents to face, you know, sort of consecutive assassination attempts in a relatively short span of time. But yeah, three is a lot for the modern era.
Is the seeming recurrence of these incidents dangerous in ways that we may not be anticipating? That is to say, to encourage others?
Well, I mean, I don't know about that. I don't think anybody, for the most part, I don't think anybody wakes up in the morning and says to themselves, today's the day I'm going to go and kill a president. I don't really think that that's how most people are wired. That said, you know, we do have a problem of inflammatory rhetoric, political rhetoric in this country. We do have a very tense political environment. And to be honest, this is an environment and rhetoric that has been fueled by the president himself. This overheated rhetoric is an unfortunate part of where we are politically in this country right now. And it bears results, right? It bears fruit.
How are you assessing the Secret Service's role in all of this, by the way?
Well, you know, in some of the stuff I've been reading earlier today, I think it's what is surprising to me is that it seems as though that Secret Service did its job, right? You have to remember that the Washington Hilton is one of the largest hotels in D.C. It's 1,100 guest rooms. It is a public space where the White House Correspondents' Dinner was. Is there's the downstairs ballroom up, and there's a separate entrance for VIPs. There's a separate green room with direct access to the stage, so the VIPs are never really, you know, between when they arrive and when they show up on stage, they're really not in public. So, you know, to my mind, the system actually worked the way it was supposed to, in that where the security was tightest is where this individual is intercepted, and that's how it's supposed to work.
As I was watching the president's comments, once he was safely returned to the White House, he had the acting AG on one side, flanked on the other by FBI Director Kash Patel. You think any heads are going to roll over this?
Probably not over this, but the reporting that came out earlier in the week about first in The Atlantic and then sort of picked up by other media outlets about, you know, Patel's supposed problems with alcohol and being too hungover to do his job, being, you know, drinking on the job and all of these things. None of that is going to sit well with Donald Trump, who I think your listeners probably are aware does not drink, yeah. Is very opposed to alcohol abuse. He lost a brother to chronic alcoholism. And so this is like one of those things. There's not a lot that gets under Donald Trump's skin unless you start to criticize him. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it's this sort of personal irresponsibility that Trump really finds hard to stomach. So my hunch would be that if Patel's job is in jeopardy, it's because of this reporting about his personal habits as opposed to the performance of the FBI or federal security at all last night.
Was this a failure of security or a success story? Here's the Adam and Jordana show.
It's both, and let me state why.
Mike Olson, CEO and co-founder of 360 Security Services. He's a former Secret Service agent.
First of all, in my opinion, from what I know, from having actually done security at the Washington Hilton, a.k.a. the Hinckley Hilton, the plan worked as it was supposed to. The event itself was held at a hotel that, you know, everybody knows. The event is held there every single year. It's the largest hotel ballroom venue in the Washington, D.C. area. So people know that that's where that's held. There's no secret about that. And so you know, Secret Service gets so much budget, gets so much resources to plan security. You can't go in and shut down an entire hotel that's under normal operations, that's receiving normal guests, some of which are probably attendees of the event that are going there. So you create layers and layers of security that build around the actual people you're protecting. So that's what we saw here, is the layers of security were built around the ballroom, were built about around how they're bringing in, I'm going to say protectees, because there was multiple Secret Service protectees there, and there were protectees from other organizations like the Capitol Police, senators, Congress people. So you have this massive event. The problem is it's not designated what's called a national special security event. Under an NSSE designation, they would be able to, the Secret Service would be able to go through and clear an entire hotel, because the hotel itself and all people on the hotel property would effectively become protectees of the Secret Service, not just the president, vice president, and other people like that.
Well, I'd like to jump in. So what's the difference, Mike? Is it just money? Should we then, wherever the president is, designate each event with the president this designation?
My simple answer to that, and my humble opinion in the current threat environment we're in, is yes. There is no secret that we haven't all observed with our own eyes here in the last 2 years that the current president is, in quite frankly, and even from conversations I've had with some of my current former colleagues, is the most threatened president in the history of the United States right now. And with that, that means you're bringing in a lightning rod into public spaces that other people exist. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news to a lot of people that attended the event, but technically, by law, they were not the responsibility of the Secret Service. Public safety is. And so bringing in that NSSE designation, when you're bringing that many people in, you know, president and others, would protect the entire space. So again, hotel, all occupants, all people. Is it something like that is incredibly expensive? And I, quite frankly, I'm not sure it's sustainable, especially in an environment where you have a current Congress that doesn't want to even fund the agency that it would be responsible for implementing NSSE events. But absolutely needs to be done, to answer your question, in my humble opinion, in these types of major, major events.
Immediately after the incident, President Trump thanked reporters on the scene. Will this mark a new relationship between the president and the press? Here's WBEN.
Political analyst Steve Roberts, as we take a look at what happened over the weekend. Steve, another shooting incident near the president, this time at the correspondents' dinner. Steve, have you ever been to the correspondents' dinner? Can you help us understand what that scene is like?
Sure. I was not there this year, but I've been to many in the past. And, this is an unusual event because both journalists and newsmakers eat at the same table. In fact, the newsmakers are guests of the news organizations. And I've always thought that this was a nice event because I've always believed that a certain mutual respect between reporters and the people who they cover is useful. And that respect has eroded in Washington in recent years. Obviously, Donald Trump has made a major part of his political profile to attack the news media as fake news, scum of the earth. And so a lot of the civility that once existed has eroded. So I think these dinners can serve a useful purpose. But, you know, a lot of folks were upset this year. A lot of journalists were upset that a number of White House officials, including the president, were invited to the dinner. The president has never come, President Trump, never come to this dinner as president before. And by all accounts, his own account, he was ready to lash out at the press, which is one of his favorite whipping boys. That was avoided. I do think that the event highlights an important political fact, which is that, you know, Donald Trump contributed very significantly to all the polling, which shows a very sharp decline in public confidence in the mainstream media and a rise in alternative sources of information, whether it's Instagram or TikTok or podcasts. It's a very different media universe today, media ecosystem in Washington today, than in the past.
Steve, I'm wondering if you think that the shooting incident could possibly bring the White House and the press corps together in some way, as opposed to this combative relationship that they've had.
No, because the president, he had a few nice words to say about the press in the aftermath of the shooting, and then he went on 60 Minutes last night and attacked the questioner, Nora O'Donnell, for asking impertinent questions. He called her a disgrace. The president, this is a very strong pattern with this president. Every once in a while, he'll say something nice. Every once in a while, he'll call for national unity. He did after the shooting, the near tragic shooting in Butler, Pennsylvania during the campaign. But within minutes, he goes back to his traditional and comfortable posture, which is attack mode. No, I whatever good feelings and a sense of common relief that everybody felt in that room, because no one wanted, no matter how antagonistic the press and the White House might be, no one in that room wished anybody ill or wished that any of the violence would succeed. But once that spasm of relief passed, I think everybody returned to their corners.
Lots of people say security was carried out as it was meant to be carried out, but not everyone agrees. Here's WBEN.
Jeff Rinaldo, security consultant and retired Buffalo police captain. Security is in focus after the shooting this weekend outside the ballroom at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Jeff, what were your immediate thoughts when you heard this?
I was kind of surprised that the individual was able to get that deep into the inner perimeter with a weapon. Generally, when you look at these presidential setups like what we saw here in Buffalo years ago, there's a couple different layers of a perimeter that somebody has to go through, whether it's different types of screening, things of that nature. But this individual was able to enter the hotel with a firearm, so that I am curious to see the after action on it.
This hotel, I mean, it really kind of sets up for a tricky situation. We've learned that this person was checked into the hotel, so they would have certain access that, you know, maybe you wouldn't allow in a secure location.
Well, for sure. I mean, when you're commingling, a secured event in a somewhat public environment, there's a lot of challenges that come to that, or come with it, I should say. But again, you know, you generally have very tight perimeters with security screening starting well before that. And based on the one piece of video we saw, the individual kind of just ran through the checkpoint and wasn't stopped. What we don't see is how he actually eventually was stopped, whether that was a physical confrontation or, he hit a locked door or something of that nature.
I mean, this kind of reminds me of the Mandalay Bay shooting in Las Vegas, to a point. I mean, that obviously was a terrible outcome. There were dozens killed in that situation, but it was someone who stayed at the hotel, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, if you're going to try to carry out an attack, obviously access to the location is huge. And, anytime that you're talking about something where there's readily available access to lodging or to stay where the event is being held, it's interesting that, some amount of screening of the hotel guest list, things of that nature might occur. But I think what this goes to show you really is that there's almost no way to prevent a lone wolf attack. I mean, I know that there's talk about family alerting the police to some intentions he may or may not have had, but it's just such a monumental task that ultimately it just comes down to highly trained law enforcement officers doing what they're there to do, stopping the attack, stop the threat.
Obviously, there's been a lot of attention on this new ballroom that the president's been planning because of this, and one of the reasons is security and being able to have these events at a more secure location. Are you surprised with everything you know about security, how difficult it can be in that sort of setting, that something like this with, I mean, not just the president, but so many people in that line of succession, so many important cabinet members are all in one place at one time?
Well, I think, again, it just comes down to the planning for the event. Obviously, Secret Service, local PD, probably spent a very considerable amount of time planning for an event, and they obviously felt that they had the venue secured. And ultimately, this individual did not get into the event. So I think that when you're talking about, a new ballroom and things like that, unfortunately, that is where, times are going, that events like these with high-profile people are not going to be able to be held in public spaces. And that really is a shame, right? Because, it's a bragging point for a location, for a hotel to say that we've hosted, presidential events or things of that nature. But at the end of the day, safety's first. And unfortunately, what we have seen here is that this particular president has had now potentially three assassination attempts on his life. So I think now security, there is just zero room for failure, and you're going to see extreme tightening now of anything where his presence is going to be.
And, you know, as you say, a third assassination attempt. I mean, two of them were outdoors, this one indoors. One is not better than the other, right?
No, you can definitely control an indoor event better. Again, we don't really know, and they're probably not going to tell us just how far this individual got before he was apprehended. But again, it's just the nature of the situation that if you have somebody that's intent on trying to cause harm, they're going to be able to hurt somebody, even if it's not the intended target. I mean, in this case, a police officer was shot, and thankfully he's going to be okay. But, you know, these are just dangerous situations, and it shows that you can't ever let your guard down, because as you saw in the video on that checkpoint, nobody was expecting an armed man to come running through it, but somebody did.
Hey, you've seen these videos. What do you make of the Secret Service response from what you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, they were clearly on it. I believe after Pennsylvania, I'm willing to bet that a lot of work went into communications in terms of not only internally within the Secret Service and event, but also externally with the other law enforcement agencies that they rely on to help secure these venues. But obviously this person was quickly detained, doesn't appear to be injured in the process. And, you know, Secret Service immediately removed the president, his wife, and the cabinet members from the venue. So it all comes down to the amount of training and expertise that they have.
What does this mean for the future of a rare and high-profile event that combines politics, the media, and newsmakers?
We are live this morning with ABC White House correspondent Karen Travers, who was in the room Saturday night, not only in the room, but two seats away from President Trump at the dais as this was all unfolding, the shooting at the Washington Hilton. Karen, if you can, what were those first moments like?
It was confusing. I was sitting two seats away from the president. It was he was in a great mood. He was chatting with the night's entertainer, mentalist Oz Perlman, and the first lady. There was a loud noise from the center aisle of the massive ballroom. I mean, they need to paint the scene for people. There are 2,600 people in this ballroom. It is a very, very large dinner. And it wasn't clear from the stage what was happening. It almost sounded like maybe the programming was beginning. You know, there was something that was happening as part of entertainment or something like that. The president said later to him it sounded like a tray that had fallen down, that he's been in enough of these kinds of dinners that some waiter had maybe dropped something, that he's heard that noise many times before. But very quickly, there were Secret Service agents on stage with us. There was one who jumped literally right in front of the president to block him. And then the counter-assault team was on stage. Those are the big guys with the guns and the helmets and the vest trying to clear the scene. It was very clear instantly that something was wrong. Caroline Levitt, the press secretary, was seated on my left. She told me, get down. We fell from our seats to the floor. And just a few feet away from me, the president was also down underneath Secret Service agents. And he was quickly rushed off the stage. There were several people on the stage who were able to crawl off, but Secret Service agents were telling me and a couple of my colleagues on the board of the White House Correspondents Association to just stay as low as possible. Don't move. After several minutes, they had determined that the situation was clear enough that we could get backstage. And there we spent about an hour waiting for information from the Secret Service, an update from the president, who was still at the hotel on the scene, about what he wanted to do. He at first posted on social media that he wanted the show to go on. He later told reporters that he was fighting like hell with Secret Service to stay. He said he wasn't making it easy for them. He wanted to see what was going on, but there was a protocol, they told him, and that he should leave. So that ended the event, and everybody then left the ballroom.
Well, it was, I mean, harrowing moments. We saw the scene that unfolded after the fact as Secret Service agents were kind of rushing through this hotel. It almost seemed like a maze of trying to find where this shooter was. I mean, what can you tell us about the moments after when I'm sure everyone in that ballroom was just not sure if the threat was over or not?
Yeah, you know, obviously the shooter never got into the ballroom. He was up a level outside of the security perimeter. The security apparatus, you know, was set in place to screen people before they come into the room. And he did not make it downstairs to the ballroom level. But they were making sure that the room itself was clear and that the threat had been contained upstairs before anybody was able to resume anything inside the room.
Karen, I know there's talk about rescheduling this. Would it be rescheduled for the same venue?
I can't talk about that just yet. I'm on the board of the Correspondents Association, and that's just way too premature to get into at this point.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.